Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Snark built in. We are a podcast of Burnt Orange Nation, and you could find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You could find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who's dodging copyright claims from Aggie Yell leaders, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
I mean, I'm always down for a good Aggie Yell leader joke. Is there a specific copyright claim, or is it because we failed to, we ran out of time instead of losing?
So, Midnight Yell practice got out again, got out into the wild. The internet is discovering it specifically because an A&M Yell leader made the claim that he did not know that Appalachian State was real. And so after they proved how real they were in College Station, thanks for the money, Aggies, Appalachian State Twitter went crazy. The internet then discovered it. How weird Midnight Yell is, they have been trying to copyright strike every copy of that video from the internet. But once something's on the internet, it's there forever.
That's amazing. I, you know, A&M, I think they have a law school now. It's not as seasoned maybe as UT's. I hope they have some seasoned assist lawyers, especially the way they ferociously come after anyone who says the words 12th and or I can't even say it, Caballero. I'm not gonna say it in English. Lest they come after us. Yeah, a litigious group, a very sensitive group. Tony Busby being your most famous alumni, I guess that makes sense. But yeah, it's, you know, anytime a Yell leader is for any reason in the news, whether it's, you know, saying that he wants Joe Paterno to die before a Penn State game, or you know, just being generally weird doofuses, I feel like the entire country takes a moment to be like, oh, they're not just like a rabid college football fan base. There's something more here that's more off and creepier than every other school in the country. And in that, I feel validated.
Again, we have all been talking about how weird this cult in College Station is for a very long time. And then when the internet figures it out, like, the number of people that I have unfortunately had to inform what whooping is, I, like, everyone's like, what's the weird thing they're doing when they make these terrible jokes or they lean back? And I'm like, it's a whoop. And what a whoop is, there are different kinds of whoops that you can do based on your status in the class. You cannot fully whoop until you're a senior. I wish I was making that up. I wish I did not know that, and I wish I was making it up. Why is that in my brain?
Yeah, for all the Aggies who listen to this podcast, feel free to leave us some messages. You can tweet at the show at GH Goodrich with any of your specific recommendations for Aggie traditions and why and how you're allowed to whoop.
Bring it, weirdos. But we're not here to talk about A&M. We're here to talk about Texas taking Alabama to the brink. Formerly number one, now number two, Alabama, thanks to, well, the aforementioned Texas Longhorns getting a shot at it. Texas had a lead going into the fourth quarter, had a lead with 90 seconds left on the clock, but could not get it done. Texas falls thanks to a last-second field goal, 20-19 to the Alabama Crimson Tide. For a team that was given absolutely no shot a team that was 20-point underdogs. People were saying smash the over for a team that people on the internet said, why are they going there? Alabama's going to beat them up. This turned out to be a portent of things to come in a crazy day of college football, with Texas standing toe-to-toe. The lowly Texas Longhorns standing toe-to-toe with the big, bad Crimson Tide.
Yeah, Jason Kirk, the arbiter of whether or not something is a blood week, the creator of the term, so he gets to decide if a college football week of upsets and weirdness is officially a blood week, has determined that this was a blood week, but Texas actually getting the win would have made it the all-time blood week, he said, because basically Texas, you know, tied Bama at worst in the school of public arbitration, that he will go ahead and call it a blood week with the number one team not winning. So, you know, home field advantage for Texas, they made the most of it. Otherwise, it was two teams that were relatively, you know, evenly matched, did different things well, not necessarily the same things, but throughout the game traded, you know, haymakers, or really, honestly, jabs, with just not a ton of haymakers on the Texas side after the beginning, or Alabama, honestly.
This was old school SEC football, man.
An SEC game honestly broke out. They're almost even in yards. They didn't have any turnovers. You know, coaches kind of played things relatively conservatively. We got really jazzed about big punts. There was a lot of kicks that were, you know, of note, whether they went in or not. And so, yeah, I mean, it an SEC game, vintage, you know, early 2000s broke out. And Texas looked every bit the part, right? Again, you say Alabama had all those penalties, and that's so rare. And we'll talk about each of these in a bit more depth. But, you know, it was Texas's chance to host a big game, and the crowd showed up and did their thing. And the team, you know, weathered an incredible amount of adversity and showed as much heart as I have seen from a Texas football team in years.
I missed on both my Podstradamus picks, but I feel pretty good in saying, like, what I wanted to see from Texas in this game was seeing how hard they could get hit and get back up. And Quinn Ewers getting injured, right? Or Jace McClellan going 81 yards for a score. I talked about it in the postgame with Seahorn, but, like, those are the types of moments in years past where Texas folds, right? And there's not an ounce of fold in this team, at least from what we saw, because if it didn't happen against Alabama, I hope it doesn't happen against UTSA or whoever, right? But, like, that's not a shot at the Roadrunners. You and I are big fans of them, but, like, Alabama and UTSA are essentially playing different sports at this point. But, like, in my mind, like, that is the biggest takeaway from this, is that in a year, in an era where Texas, again, if they get punched in the mouth in the past, they've had this penchant to fold, where one thing turns into two things and two things turn into six things, right? A year ago, 2 years ago, that Jason McClellan 81-yard run turns into a three and out on offense and then a 15-play scoring drive to go up two scores, and it's never close from there. And that's what we did not see. And that's what I wanted to see from Texas. And again, we're not in the moral victories, and I'll talk about it more. But I think when we look at, as observers, that's our job, is to be observers of this team and observers of what is happening on the field. That is the most notable thing for me. We'll talk about the defense in just a minute, because that's the other really notable thing for me, and really the point of attack on either side of the ball. But in the past, there would be moments where you'd see Texas fold, where the shoulders would slump, the eyes would get big, and it's like, oh, crap, it's happening again. And I did not see that. I saw a team that said, I'm not scared of you. I don't care what happened in the past. I don't care who you are. I don't care what happened in 2008 or whatever. This is our moment, and we're going to win the game. And that's what I wanted to see. And that's what we saw. And it was incredible.
The amount of adversity in that, just that span packed in, right? So the non-call kind of pass interference where he was holding Jatavion Sanders, you know, arms to his sides as he tried to jump up and catch the ball with his teeth, I guess, you know, where you lost 4 points there. And then the next play immediately is the 81-yard run. That back-to-back absolutely deflates this team in previous years. And then on the ensuing touchdown drive, when you show the stuff you're made of, Ewers goes out. Again, the narrative replays itself. Star quarterback in the first quarter, game can go either way, goes out. Like, all of these things, like the amount of drama passed in there. But how did they respond, the defense specifically? Six straight punts. They forced six straight punts in that span. I mean, it's really, it's incredible. That's the reason this was a game, is they just That spine stood up straight. They showed some fortitude that I don't know any team in the country could match. Just the amount of things that happened. And, of course, that wears down after a while. Alabama has a lot of, you know, one of their 913 assistants saw something to change up and try some different things, you know, empty sets and let, you know, your quarterback run when that wasn't really a part of the scouting report necessarily and you know, get some stuff there. Yeah, they fought back. You knew they would. But again, when you're talking about responding to adversity, when you saw the fourth quarter, when Alabama finally breaks their punt streak and gets a touchdown on a long drive of empty back or one back spread formation and just kind of gets underneath and slices and cuts and dices you up, and the Heisman quarterback finally looks like the Heisman quarterback, and they have a fourth down conversion in there. Again, they could have absolutely folded, but what did they do on the next drive? They got the stop on fourth down for the second consecutive drive. Bama goes on fourth down, the fourth and inches this time. I mean, that's hard, man. And they drive down and hit a big field goal when Card is literally, like, you know, being carried away from being Byron Leftwich. Just
yes,
it's incredible. It really is inspiring.
I think that to me, like, is emblematic of what I love to see in this game, right? Because the big questions going into this, especially after what happened against Arkansas a year ago, is can Texas acquit itself in the trenches? Can Texas come up and body Alabama where it matters the most? And being able to go up against this defensive front, being able to go up against the Alabama freaking Crimson Tide offensive line and say, we're not going to give you a freaking inch. Like, that is not Texas football that we've seen in the last decade. That is Texas football that we saw that beat USC in the national championship. I'm not comparing this defense to that, because that was a chock full of NFL guys defense. But what I am saying is we haven't seen that type of defense since Brian Arakpo was on campus, since Sergio Kindle was on campus, since Earl Thomas was roaming in the secondary. We haven't seen that physicality, that ability in a very long time. And to me, that is, again, one of the things that we have to talk about. And so let's just go ahead and start there. We'll start with the defense. I know it's second in the show notes, but we're going rogue here. When we talk about this game, it is impossible to tell the story of this game without talking about the six consecutive punts, right? That is the stretch of the game. That was a make or break, and it did a little bit of both for Texas, honestly. It made the defense and the offense's inability to respond kind of broke Texas a little bit there. That's not really what we're going to harp on, but this Texas forced five consecutive three and outs, six punts, and held Bryce Young to a really most of that yardage that he, his 213 yards of the day, most of that yardage came in like the final two or three drives of that game to come away with the win. And so, like, that middle stretch for Texas, the fact that they didn't have an actual wide receiver go over 40 yards receiving, like, all of these questions we had for Texas, I didn't expect them to be answered against Alabama, but they sure as heck were.
In the second and third quarters, Gerald, they held Alabama to 43 total yards combined. They held them to two first downs across two quarters. They only had six first downs as a team in the first three quarters of football. Like, we're talking not about a Gary Patterson TCU defense. I mean, we're talking about, you know, an Alabama defense in you know, the early Saban prime when, you know, they threw the ball six times and had, you know, nine first rounders on the defense. We're talking about, you know, Miami in the 80s. We're talking about a team playing Iowa. I was really
current
bad at the
Iowa.
Offense. Current Iowa. But no, I mean, that's really absurd. Yes, admittedly, one of those was an 81-yard touchdown, so they didn't have to have a bunch of first downs on that drive. But that was just one thing that schemed right, had a couple blown assignments, and you really didn't see that again. So again, responding from that, incredible. But just like, take a second to think about that. I thought the overall tackling looked good. They had a lot of plays where, you know, Barron or Cook, or you had someone in space, and if they missed the tackle, like in years past on a bubble screen, that goes for a lot of yards, and that eats Texas up. And it looked like Texas was playing downhill, getting to receivers behind the line of scrimmage. Cook had two tackles for loss because he blew up bubble screens that, again, were a bane to Texas' existence in previous years. They played hair on fire downhill, I'm going to hit you before you can make a play type of defense. And if the first guy missed, there was two guys behind him. You saw gang tackling. I mean, it really was incredible. And look, we know about the Ewers injury. I mean, at one point, Obviously, Deshaun Jameson went out, almost had my Podstradamus with an interception that would have you know, really certainly affected the game.
That had gone the other way. That was going for six if he caught it, and that had gotten both of us.
You're absolutely right. We certainly would have taken that one, and I believe that was that the Alabama touchdown drive? Either way, I guess not, because Alabama had the touchdown drive on the play. But nonetheless, I believe that UT was not in the greatest offensive straits either, so those points would have been helpful right in that specific part of the game flow. But with Jameson out, there was a point, I believe Watts was just cramping, but he had a series off, at least one. When at the stadium, I noticed he was on the sideline stretching, and I was like, wait a minute, who's in? It was Jameer Johnson and Austin Jordan. At one point, Xavier Bryce even got in. That's like not what anyone expected, and that was when we were shutting Alabama down. It was in the middle of that stretch with freshmen corners. Like, I mean, it really was a next man up mentality. They didn't rotate a ton of guys. They played with their best for as much as they could, and I thought that's incredible. But you saw it with Hudson Carter in the offense, but you honestly saw it with Johnson. They did pick on him on the kind of fourth quarter scoring drives. They realized a freshman, when you split him out five wide, is on an island and just attacked him and
stuff. Yeah.
Credit to them. I mean, there's not much you can do. I think three straight and then a Bryce Young rush were all targeting basically his area. But I'm not mad at him, right? Like, that's no. You know, that's a lot to ask. But the fact that it took until the end of the fourth before Bama could even find a little bit of daylight to do anything, credit to the defense, and honestly credit to Kwiatkowski, Patterson, and the whole defensive staff for this scheme, right? They attack things against Bama, like, you know, different wrinkles, different blitzes. That Watts blitz that, you know, almost got home on the final drive also worked earlier in the game, where he did hit quarterback, but he basically pitched it out and ended up with a tackle for a loss on the other side by Jalen Ford, but could have very easily been a sack. Also, we got to work on Bryce Young being able to throw the ball as people are hitting him. He shouldn't be able to do that. It's not fair. But, you know, like, it that was a nice wrinkle. Ovi sliding in and being a stand-up blitzer, not on the edge, but off of a tackle.
Didn't have that on my bingo card.
Was interesting. I mean, these are really interesting schematic things that Texas did that absolutely affected Alabama's offense. Absolutely. Alabama shot themselves in the foot some. Alabama didn't execute some, but absolutely Alabama was put off what they game planned and wanted to do by Texas defense for three quarters out scheming them, and they not have no answer, no punch back. That's where six straight punts comes from.
And you mentioned something earlier on about that Jace McClellan run and guys being out of position. One of the things that, like, I was standing on the table for in the post game is how Jalen Ford responded to that, right? Because Jalen Ford was the guy that was out of position. Alfred Collins got his numbers turned, and that allowed the offensive tackle to block two guys, right? Like, the end got taken off, allowed the seam, and if the linebacker scrapes over the top properly, he's in the hole, but he missed his run fit. And then Jalen Ford comes out and has a heck of a game. 10 tackles, 2 for loss, a sack on a third down to force a punt. Like, again, I keep harping on it, but, like, those are the types of things where a kid, he's a second or third year, like, he's a second year player. Like, he's a young kid. He's a guy who could, again, have that rough coaching that I'm sure he got on the sidelines, could do one of two things for him, and it absolutely motivated him. And so seeing those guys respond, seeing the young guy, seeing Ryan Watts, again, a guy who we love. And I talked about it in the post-game live stream just a little bit, but one of the things that I really loved about this game, and I mean this not as a joke but as a compliment, is, like, we didn't notice guys for the wrong reasons. And that, in the past, we noticed the linebackers being, and again, outside of that McClellan play, right, we noticed that the end did not set the edge and the linebacker was in the wrong spot. And that's about the only time that I really noticed a guy for the wrong reason. A lot of the noticing was like, oh, that guy was in the right spot. Oh, that guy was. And to me, that is, again, emblematic of what we want to see and need to see from Texas is the little things. Because when you notice the guys, it's because they messed something up that was a little thing. It's because they didn't follow through their fundamentals. There was something off about their delivery, how they handled it. There was something wrong. And so the fact, again, that we didn't notice them is a positive sign for me. And again, this is a secondary. A secondary is a mix of older guys that should be better and younger guys that need some more reps in the trenches. But they held Alabama, these five-star Alabama wide receivers, to a pretty paltry day. Jahmyr Gibbs is an absolute nightmare as a mismatch because a linebacker, it's it's the classic where a linebacker just can't cover that guy, and it is what it is. But like, when the running back is the leading receiver, that's a good thing for your defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it was Ekior, their guard, who actually got outside on that one and just destroyed Collins and got Ford in the same play. It was actually, I think, got pushed inside. It was Collins' fault, but also Sorrell was on the other side of him. He got pushed. Gilbo wasn't in a great position on his angle, and Shark took himself out of the play by diving really hard towards the line of scrimmage. So it was like four or five things that happened perfectly for Alabama to execute. Again, one guy getting two blocks that well, and four Texas players all taking, I mean, put that on Ford for sure, but on all of those guys not getting there, right? And it happened. But then you saw, even if one guy was slightly out of position, Texas was playing so hard that it didn't happen. You saw, that's how good Bryce Young is. In the first half, I was having conversations with the folks I was watching the game with in the stadium that, you know, you would not know that Bryce Young was the Heisman quarterback. If I told you one of these quarterbacks, and I'm not trying to say anything crazy here, but one of the quarterbacks in the first half was a Heisman quarterback, you say, oh, that guy who got hurt for Texas. Young was good in the second half, but in the first half, you wouldn't really necessarily know that. But that's why he is going to play on Sundays for a long time. He's so smart. He's so good. He's agile. He's an amazing athlete. What he started doing in the second half was taking advantage a couple times of Texas being so eager to make the play, where when he makes these crazy scrambles that very few other quarterbacks make, I had two different people describe him as Manziel-esque in the second half. I mean,
I believe it's Manzielian.
Manzielian, yes. The touchdown pass that they had, their only other touchdown, was him avoiding a sack at the line of scrimmage, diagonally sprinting out 12 yards, resetting his own little pocket, seeing Gibbs basically slip behind Watts, but because Overshown says, I'm going to go make this sack because Young has now been using his legs on the previous few drives, I'm going to go make the sack and not let him beat us here. Basically between Watts and thinking Overshown's there and Overshown vacating the zone, he takes a crushing shot from, I believe, Coburn, but still whips a perfect ball to a pretty open Gibbs for that touchdown. But that's, A, takes multiple things, a scrambling quarterback doing all the perfect things, having the perfect arm angle, timing, and ability to put that pass in, resetting the pocket where he did, like all of that. It took, like, anytime Bama had those plays, it took something magic. The Watts play, his knee almost went down. It didn't, but almost went down because he went so low to the ground to get under that sack. Not many people stand back up. I do that. I'm at the freaking chiropractor for a month fixing my back. You know, goes down like that, pops back up, and then runs 20 yards. Was there a hold? Sure, but I don't think Ovi gets him after that anyways. It's just that's a Heisman play. There were multiple in the second half. It wasn't, you know, Texas's defense failed. It was Bryce Young made Heisman plays, and there's no other way to put it. Those were plays that make Heisman reels. I mean, there was one drop pass where he did the same thing in the first half where he scrambled and put about 40 yards down the field and his receiver dropped it. Again, a Heisman play. There's only three, maybe most, quarterbacks in the country who can make the play that he did. He had about four or five of those, and then basically the whole final drive, right? Like, what he did, his final three drives, 15 for 19, 127, 41 rush yards, one touchdown. That's most of his stats for the game. It honestly is. But his ability to do that on the final three drives when it mattered, when they basically just opened up. I knew Texas was in trouble on the final scoring drive when their running back who'd been eating us up, Gibbs, comes in the backfield. And just casually, as if he wasn't about to go do a game-winning drive, you see Young just tap him on the chest and point out and just doesn't, no animation, just, hey, you need to go out completely to the opposite side of the field and I'm going to run this play. And just waits for him to get out there and then gets a first down. Like, I mean, He was just lights out. I think he was 5 for 7 on that final drive, and the only two that weren't were end zone shots before they took the field goal to see if he could get the touchdown. I mean, second half Bryce Young was pretty magical. I have to give him credit, but gosh, it took all of that. It took every bit of that to get the best of the Texas defense. So they need to be commended. They really, truly did. They held Alabama's, you know, running game utterly in check.
We said it last week. We were like, it's just ULM. It's just ULM, right? But this defense played fast, this defense played physical, this defense played big, and it was one of the better defensive performances I've seen from a Texas Longhorn defense in a very long time. 2 sacks, 7 hurries, 6 tackle for losses. holding the running backs to, like, Jahmyr Gibbs had 2.4 yards per carry. Again, he had a bunch of receptions, but holding Alabama's running game outside of that 81-yard touchdown run, 2.6 yards per carry. Like, those are the things that are going to set you up for success in the Big 12. And Texas talked about, like, this is not going to define our season, but this should absolutely be something that you build off of moving forward.
Yeah, and just quick shout-out. You talked about Jalen Ford, you know, big, big plays, that sack. Anthony Cook, a lot of cover zero, put him in positions he had to do what he had to do, and he did it. 2 tackles for loss, 9 total tackles. Overshawn flew around, 5 solo tackles. I thought Watts was really good. If he has 2 sacks instead of 2 near sacks, I think we're talking about Ryan Watts as a player of the week. 5 tackles, 2 near sacks that don't show up on the one. I guess one's a hurry. But in the box score, Ogofu got home for a sack. Vernon Broughton, 2 quarterback hurries in there. You know, good to see that. The fact that Texas had 7 hurries and 2 sacks, if you just call that as quarterback pressures total, 9 of those, and Bama had, I think, 5 total in the stat sheet. Now, you know, it took a lot to get there, and we'll talk about the offense, but is not in a million years how I would have thought this game, you know, ended up.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
So moving on to the offense, there's 2 different offenses we have to talk about in this game, Kyle. There's the offense with Quinnifilius Ewers on the field, and there's the offense. So it's three offenses. There's the offense with Quinn Ewers, and the offense with Hudson Card, then there's the offense with one-legged Hudson Card. They're like 3 different offenses that you have to talk about when you talk about this game. And I think specifically for Texas, it is frustrating to see, once again, an Alabama team that's very beatable doesn't get beat because a quarterback gets injured, right? Like, I was having flashbacks. I made a joke on Twitter that, like, we are still feeling the effects of Mac Brown's monkey paws bargain to beat USC. Like, that's the only way to describe the series of events that really started in, like, oh, wait, when Michael Crabtree scores that touchdown because Earl Thomas thought he heard a whistle from the stands. Like, it's the only way to explain what the heck happened. But, you know, you got to play the hand that you're dealt. That's what football is. Quinn Ewers in the first quarter, 9 of 12 for 134 yards. Should have probably had more than that based on some pass interference calls that didn't happen. Xavier Worthy had a long touchdown pass that he wasn't able to haul in completely. Hudson Card came in 14 to 22 for 158 yards as well. Had a couple of scrambles in there as well. Used his legs. The quarterbacks to me were simultaneously not the story of the offense and the story of the offense, right? Because you obviously can't tell the story of this game without talking about Quinn Ewers getting hurt. Like, you can't tell the story of this game. But for me, the story of the game, or at least what I noticed more, was the fact that I am still baffled at how much better Xavier Worthy looked than the Alabama cornerbacks. How Jordan Whittington bodied up this vaunted Alabama secondary, and how they played one of the best games from that tandem that I've seen in a complete... Again, Xavier Worthy thought that dude was food every down. And really, in the fourth quarter, that dude was still food, but Hudson Card didn't have legs to push off of to throw touchdown passes. He had him beat on a double move. That was 6. We saw it. We all saw it, and the ball went up, and he just wasn't in the right spot. He didn't have the chutzpah behind it to do it. But seeing, again, I don't know if they're going to see a defensive back as good as Kool-Aid McKinstry for the rest of the season. And so seeing the promise of this receiving core, and again, we'll know more. Both are air quotes listed as day-to-day. Sark is doing that thing. They're both quarterbacks are listed as day-to-day, but we know relatively serious injuries for both, I would believe. For Texas, there's a lot of promise. We've got to see, again, is Hudson Card healthy for the weekend? Is Quinn Ewers going to be healthy by OU? Seeing Ewers match the hype was one of the most cathartic moments I've had watching Texas football in a very, very long time.
I talked about PK and Patterson scripting, honestly, first 3 quarters, but opening script on the defense and letting Alabama adjust to that. I mean, I thought Sark's opening script was phenomenal, and I thought all the things you saw him do with Ewers was phenomenal. I wanted to see how they counterpunched, because basically they knew and guessed correctly. And I think, you know, based on their opening being a tight end screen and an RPO, they understood that the game was there to get other people involved off of Bijan action, because Alabama put seven eyes on Bijan. They basically said, Quinn Ewers will have to beat us. And then after Ewers goes out, they said, well, Hudson Card will have to beat us. And then when he was out, it's okay, well, now you're hobbled second string quarterback with no real other option, you know, in this caliber of game, will have to beat us. It will not be Bijan Robinson. And you know, that's got to be frustrating for Bijan, who himself had a good game. But just, you know, at all times, there's guys on him. I mean, some of their most successful plays, their big shot plays, were off Bijan action. You know, they were keying on Bijan Robinson, and they did a really great job. Again, I wish they got the 4 points early on, you know, one of those throws to Jatavion Sanders in the end zone, especially the, you know, Kool-Aid is very good. But, you know, I think Sanders, without his arms held down, has a chance to go up with his extra 5 inches and maybe catch one of those balls. But, you know, he came back, and they, again, credit to Sark, like the way they schemed, knowing that Bama could only do that with man coverage, and knowing that Worthy could not be covered, man coverage, like that amount of confidence, they basically were sending, you know, max protect, right? Like they were sending Jatavion to flow across and chip Sanders or basically, you know, keep a running back and a tight end as you know, upbacks, like on a punt play, to keep the secondary shield from the pass rush. Was genius, because you had a player like Worthy and a guy like Whittington who could help him the short to medium stuff and extend stuff after the catch, but you had Worthy just absolutely dominating, to where Alabama had to adjust and put safeties over the top. Even though they wanted to stop Bijan, they had to switch it up because Worthy was that good. And so again, with all three of their three-headed monster that we talked about all season, with Ewers, Worthy, and Robinson, I would have loved to see what they could have done. And again, all the complimentary parts, we didn't really get to see that beyond the touchdown, you know, and field goal that was hoped for more, but really that's all you got is those two drives. But you hoped that could have been two touchdowns and then some, right? But yeah, I mean, you can never say a slanderous word about Hudson Card if you're a Longhorn fan again after today, because I will say, all the talk about how great Ewers was and how much he looked like he lived up to the hype, how hard is it to come in as the second guy taking no first team reps all week, knowing that Ewers was the starter over you, and come in and say, "Don't worry, I'm gonna put the team on the back." And you know, I love the story that came out, that Bijan said he prayed with Card over it. Just like, these guys want it. They're a team. They're you know, next man up again mentality. And Hudson, I mean, as his body degraded and parts of him were left on the field, it seemed like that last 20-yard scramble honestly looked like he put the team on his back. The guy, the Madden video of someone running down the field after the hardest hit in a safety in the league broke his leg. like he couldn't hardly move his body, but he gutted a 2nd and 19 scramble for 20 yards. Like it was downright heroic. I mean, and again, it's not just, oh, he did. He went 14 for 22 for 158, had first down scrambles of 9 and 20. He had another 7-yard scramble where he got his injury. But, I mean, he did some things. Was he perfect? No. But, I mean, again, Alabama's defense does not give perfect. You just have to take what you can get, make some plays, and you know, hope you can break through. Like, for all that Texas did and that Alabama didn't do, Alabama's defense lived up to the billing. They are very, very, very good, and Texas still was able to do a lot against them.
Yeah, and I think that to me is the selling point, right? And specifically when you think about you know, the Bijan Robinson play that clinched your Podstradamus, that long pass that he had. When you go back and watch the game, if you watch it from the all 22, like behind the quarterback angle, it's not just about the throw from Card. It's not just about the catch from Bijan. But if you look at the end, the battles of the offensive tackles and the Alabama pass rush, Kelvin Banks going one-on-one with the best pass rusher, the presumptive number one pick, that's a one-on-one rep win for Kelvin Banks, a true freshman going out there with a guy who is going to be picked number one. If Will Anderson is not picked number one, his legs have fallen off, right? Like that. And then on the other side, and we have to say this because we talked all about him last year up and down, Christian Jones had his man. held him at the point of attack, was not giving a darn inch. Like, and I am so freaking impressed with the growth that those guys have shown, right? Christian Jones came last year, was the worst graded offensive lineman in the conference, according to Pro Football Focus, right? Just absolutely just got beat on pass rush time after time. And he was one of the top offensive linemen in the country this week, going up against the Alabama pass rush. And that is, to me, again, we the questions we had going into the year are the same questions we have had every year that we've watched Texas football since, I don't know, 2010, 2011, maybe. It's like, what is this offensive line going to be? And for the first time in a long time, I feel like the offensive line for Texas is going to be a strength for the offense. Now, I'm not going to say they're going to be perfect, right? And you and I went into this season saying, just don't be bad. Right? Just be okay. And they were way better than okay on Saturday. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. There are a couple of really good pass rushers in the Big 12 that were up there in the top five in the country against right behind Will Anderson a year ago. So it's not going to get much easier. It might get slightly easier, maybe 5% easier. But you've got guys in at West Virginia and Iowa State and Kansas State that are really, really Oklahoma State, they're really good pass rushers. So the fact that they acquitted themselves so well against the Alabama pass rush was incredible. Bijan only had six lost yards in it. And again, some of that goes with Bijan not losing yards, but like that's just not what he does. But the fact that he was the focal point of their defensive scheme, and both he and the offensive line played such a good game that he only lost 6 yards, right? That to me, again, I was expecting Will Anderson's Heisman campaign to start on Saturday. Like, just full transparency. And not only did it not, but he was so frustrated at times that he got way outside of himself for like 80% of that game, was not playing great, was making dumb penalties, was making dumb choices. And part of that goes with the fans, right? And part of that is Texas got in his head. And I think in my mind, like, I have not seen anybody frustrate Will Anderson like that outside of the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, I mean, the line deserves a ton. And again, I'll go back to the scheme, right? We saw a little bit of a hint of it, but Carrick coming in as an extra tight end, basically having a six lineman set. Like, I love it. Moving, you know, Sanders is a chipping. Bijan had, you know, some stellar step up in the hole and absorbed blocks, especially late in the game. It's tough, right? It's tough. Like, you're scheming, so you're taking some things away, but they made the calculations and they did some things. I keep coming back to, again, after Ewers goes down, they do get the touchdown because they're on the goal line, but they basically, in their next few series, it just feels like they do crab up a little bit on offense. They punt three straight times. And then there was a perception change, you know, again, for all of us who thought, you know, if we cover, we're great. If we keep it with the two scores, what a win that will be. At the end of the half, right, I think the whole game and that drive also itself, perceptions changed. They were going to run the clock out, but then Bijan pops off an 18-yarder. Like, the one time he's able to get a little bit of space, he goes, and then it follows it up immediately. Like, hurry up, go get him the ball, he's hot, with that big catch. So it goes from run the clock out, goes from we just want to hang to, oh, let's go win. Then there's back-to-back pass interference calls. Again, a lot of pass interference. I think I'm not being, you know, cynical. I think it is coached the way OU also coaches. Like, if you get beat, it's better to grab their face mask. If you get beat, it's better to
15 is better than 6.
Yep. And for OU, who is the Alabama of the Big 12, as much as I hate to say it, like, you're going to make our conference refs call it on us, right? That's the OU coach's mentality. For Alabama, it's, hey, we're Alabama. Are you really going to beat us, referees? Like, they force a ref to make a call. And a lot of them they called. A couple of them, some of them, they didn't. But back-to-back pass interferences, and then we haven't really talked about it, but imagine the scenario where if Ewers is in, or if Carr's just a little bit more confident in himself and he makes that boundary throw to Worthy, one, because Worthy had him beat on the comeback one tick sooner, and he doesn't have to be taken out of bounds. He even has a chance to toe touch to keep that in. That's a touchdown. You're up 17. The field goal doesn't get shanked, blocked, whatever. I think shanked and blocked. But
it went down credited as a block to Will Anderson.
Sure, give it to him. but I mean, it was a bad snap, which, you know, we saw some of, and it just got shanked. But you know, you're going into halftime. Like, I just think about that. They basically had the play they wanted, the matchup they wanted with Worthy there. If that was yours, or again, if Card had a little bit more confidence, a little bit more, you know, at first team, this is me, and was able to get that out 1 second sooner, didn't, you know, take him so far to the sideline. could have been an entirely different game. And we, our perception as fans, I think as the team, as players, went from, you know, we didn't go get it versus, oh, just happy to be here. Happy to hang. Look at us. This is great, you know? And they came out in the second half, and it took truly, like I said before, to go back to it, a Heisman performance from the other quarterback versus our half of our second quarterback, and it still was 1 point and a couple calls away from going the other way. Gerald, the only thing to talk about in the offense that we haven't talked about is those field goals, right? Burt came up otherwise, but we had to take attempt four of them inside the 20. I mean, do you just chalk that up to Alabama being huge and having a bunch of big five-star guys at every position? Linebackers who, I mean, they are fast. They fly downhill. There's no secondary break stuff on them. Their safeties come up and tackle. Their line just gets off blocks so well. I mean, it's so hard to do stuff when that field shrinks on those athletes. I think their quality of defense shined in the red zone more than Texas's offense faulted. In my opinion.
Yeah, and to me, it's the... I always think about having to play in a phone booth, right? And like the less space you have to operate, the more team speed comes into play. And I think like it's not, nobody's going to be shocked to say that Alabama is the more talented team than Texas. And not, that's not a shot at Texas. Alabama has the highest blue chip ratio in the country. It just is what it is. Like that's how math works. But when you, the smaller amount of field you have to play in, the higher advantage that the more talented, the faster team has. Because against any other defense, Bijan probably catches that corner and goes in for a touchdown, right? Against any other defense, you're able to get that push. But again, when you're trying to run between the tackles against Alabama and they know you're trying to run between the tackles, they're going to put every single body they have right there. And when you've got, you know, when you've got Hudson Card back there, they're less worried about throwing that goal line fade. And they know that the ref is not going to throw the flag if it's a one-on-one and the defensive back is tackling him at mid-catch. So... in my mind, like that was the Alabama defense just bowed up. And that I think is the one thing, if there's one negative, there are things to take away. But I think the biggest negative for me is that Texas is going to have to clean that up in moving forward, because there are good defenses. There are good defensive fronts in the conference. And so if you cannot get the 3 yards you need on the goal line with a running back like Bijan Robinson, and maybe that's a situation where you go wildcat or you do something else, you mix it up, especially with the quarterback situation. That's the one thing that really gives me pause as I think about this performance, because there's a lot to take away from it. There's a lot of hype that we can roll into it. And as far as the special teams miscues, it's insane to me that you have a scholarship deep snapper and you can't get that cleaned up. Because I think the block, as much as some of the sacks that Texas had on Bryce Young were coverage sacks, that feels like a process block, for lack of a better term, because everything was half a step slower than it should have been. That's why the finger gets on it. So the hold was half a step slower because the ball was low. The kick was half a step slower because the ball was low. And so that's a process block in my mind. It's not necessarily on the defense. That's on the kicking team for not performing. And there's the conversation of like field goals get you beat, which yes is true, and I believe that in a lot of ways. And there was the stats guys are like, well, you know, seven's always better than six, and that's how it works. But when your defense is playing that well against Alabama, and you have seen that you cannot get those 3-5 yards in the red zone. If that goes in, we're having a different conversation, because that's a touchdown they need at the end of the game instead of a field goal. So we're having a completely different conversation. There's a lot that goes into having that discussion. There's a lot of nuance. If the refs see that Bryce Young's shin is on the ground when he throws that ball, we're having a different conversation, because that's a touchdown instead of a field goal. So there's a different conversation we need to have, because there's so much nuance to those decisions. I'm a firm believer. Red zone field goals get you beat, and it happened against Texas. But with the way the defense was playing, and Texas, again, if that field goal goes up and they continue to get those stops, that field goal, would I have rather that been a touchdown? 10 times out of 10. But am I upset that Sark made that choice in that situation after deciding? Because it really, what it seemed like to me is Sark was like, I don't have a scheme for Hudson Card right now. So let's try to get out of this half with a tie. The start of that drive was, we're just going to kill the clock. And then they crack it's and Bijan was like, I don't want to do that, coach. And so when they got in position, Sark was like, okay, let's push this ball a little bit. So in a situation in which you're content of getting out of the half
right.
with a tie and you're trying to bleed the clock because you need to go in and scheme something up for the second half.
That's right. Points were just lagniappe at that point, right? You weren't factoring that in. You were going in tied and feeling good about the way your defense was playing and regrouping with a different offense with a different quarterback, right? Like, I think you're absolutely right there. I will say on that one, I talked about the worthy touchdown, but the way they were eating Bijan up, I don't think it was the wrong call at all. They just were so strong against the run. I will also say, to Bijan's credit, with all of that in the first half, after he had the shoulder injury when I was rewatching, he had 7 more carries, a big block on that downfield throw to Kasey Kahne, where he stepped up and absorbed it with a bum shoulder, right? Like, he put the team on his back. He really did. I mean, both he and Hudson Card, just warriors, and I'm very proud of them. But the first thing, before I rewatched the game, I immediately went and watched the play that Ewers got hurt on, masochist, I guess. But it while devastating to watch, I was curious, because like, live, I was pretty upset. I didn't know, again, how tough it was to get 2 yards in Alabama when you have Bijan Robinson. And you've been blocking relatively well to that point. But I saw it throughout the game. But the play, if butterfly effect, if they don't call the blitz that they did, basically in that package against the play that Sark tried, they had been basically flowing Sanders either in pre-play motion or at the snap across as an extra blocker, basically pick up who gets through, but especially focus on the opposite end. And so they ran a play that put all the motion flowing to the left, like Texas has put on tape before, but they snuck Sanders out, like basically on a middle screen at the goal line, that if, you know, there's not a freak 5-star athlete in Dallas Turner crushing Ewers, that's there. It was wide open, you know, if he doesn't get killed. Ewers makes the right play. Don't try to force it, throw it out. It just so happened to be able to do that. He left his feet, and then, you know, a guy launches into you, and yeah, there it is. But, you know, I didn't like the call live, went back and watched it. I like the guts from Sark. I hate, you know, obviously what happened, but I don't know. Like I said, I think we will work some things out. I don't in no way think that we got out coached or made the wrong decisions. I think, you know, everything was there for a game winner for Texas. Ball just didn't break their way.
And we'll see. There were a lot of tough breaks for Texas. We'll see how it plays out. Quick Podstradamus update. Kyle hit on Bijan with 100 total yards and a score. Did not get his one takeaway for the defense. I had Bijan. I let myself talk myself into going. I had 20 originally. I ended up going 25 because I wanted to feel gutsy. Bijan ended up with 21. And then I had a non-offensive touchdown. Again, Deshaun Jameson could have done us both a favor with that one. Kyle leads 2-1 on the year. We've got UTSA this weekend at 7 o'clock on Longhorn Network. We'll be back on Thursday to preview the number 21 Texas Longhorns taking on the UTSA Roadrunners. So now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. Number one, volleyball continues to cut a swath through everybody that they face, sweeping Denver 3-0 as they close out the non-conference schedule. Getting ready for Big 12 play. Spread the action around. Not a lot of the most familiar names leading the statistics here, which is a good thing against Denver.
Yeah, I mean, Madison Skinner will be a familiar name. I think she's All-American talent and really, you know, one of our best players for sure. Kayla Caffey, glad to see her get 8 kills, 3 blocks. Reigning national player of the week, Logan Eggleston, didn't have to do a ton with her 6 kills, but Zoe Fleck just continues to be the revelation in the season for me. 16 digs, 1 ace, just so unbelievably good.
Yeah, that was a big pickup for them in the offseason. Next up for Texas, Houston's coming to town on Thursday. There are just 2 more matches left before conference play. Number 23 soccer comes out of the week perfect, beating Utah State 2-1 in a little bit of a exciting one, and then going up 5-0 on UT Rio Grande Valley.
Yeah, Lexi Massimo got the penalty kick early against Utah State, her first goal of the year. Trinity Byers got the closeout in the 63rd minute. Massimo on the assist, 46 straight when they score at least 2 goals. UTRGV was a cruise. They only got 1 shot on goal. The other team, Texas, put 5 in the net. It extends Texas' unbeaten streak to 5 matches. I really like to see. I did not believe this stat when I read it, but Messimo got her 21st assist of her career in that one, moving her into a tie for fourth all time in program history. Again, she's played one season plus six games. So she's real good, real unbelievably good.
And Texas soccer hasn't been around that long. So like, let's just put that into context as well. But she's incredible. Next up for soccer, they've got Texas Southern on Thursday, UCF on Sunday. And then 2 weeks from now, they'll be playing some conference soccer. Number 15 women's golf. It's good to have golf in this show. I missed it. Number 15 women's golf tied for second after the opening round of the Annika tournament, picking back up where they left off last spring.
That's right. Bo Park led the Longhorns with a 3-under round, second best of anyone in the opening round of the field. And this field includes some good ones. 8 of the top 16 teams in the country there, and Bo Park looks every bit the All-American and potential for an end-of-season award type thing if first round of golf of the season is anything to judge by.
8 of the top 16 ranked teams in the nation in this tournament. So Texas showing what they can do early, and hopefully they can close that out. We'll obviously have an update for you next week. But now's the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
So I was fortunate and excited to be at the game. A really great game to see live, a really great atmosphere. It was fun. I will admit it. It was a fun game to be at, other than, you know, the final outcome was tough, but it was fun. I wanted to take a chance to commend all of the listeners of this podcast who are a part of that crowd, but just greater Longhorn Nation, right? I think there's been a pretty, maybe not at times completely unfair, but damning stereotype that Texas games are quiet and Texas fans are fair weather and, you know, it's the wine and cheese crowd and they don't really watch the game. And I'll tell you, there was a lot of loud Longhorns. I mean, Will Anderson kind of gave the Aggies their second loss of the weekend when he effectively said it was louder than Kyle Field last year. He said it was the loudest and craziest environment he had ever played in. So 105,000 turned out. They were great. The crowd cheered through, you know, some tough stuff, right? Some injuries, some stuff that could have deflated. And we talked about the team responding, but kudos, honestly, to the Texas fans. If you were there, I give you a round of applause. You were tremendous. I mean, you caused delay of games, false starts, timeouts because the clock wound down. I mean, it was so loud that there was multiple times that Bryce Young had to run out to his receivers on the edge to be able to communicate something to them. That drive immediately after Ewer's injury, it just felt like the crowd was trying to come in and you know, be the difference of the talent gap that we had just lost. So I really thought it was incredible. Alabama was rattled, right? Nick Saban will say they just didn't execute. But 15 penalties, 100 yards, both the highest in the Nick Saban era, right? The previous high was 13 penalties. There was 10 in the first half, the most since 2010. 0 in the fourth quarter feels weird after the first three quarters, but maybe they just cleaned everything up and stopped doing it, except the opening play of the fourth when they did tackle Keelan from behind by his face mask in a time that would have given them a first down from like the 1 yard line with three attempts to get in. That would have been a touchdown that would have also probably won the game, but that's fine. It's not the point to just complain about the refs, but the people there did. They let the refs have it. They yelled and they screamed and they put the horns up and they did everything you could ask of a college football crowd. And I love that 97% of the crowd didn't move when the game was over. They stood there and let the horns run and sing the Eyes of Texas, and they put the horns up, and it was kind of the most somber bit because no one was happy, but they were also proud of the guys, and so every person sang, but no one sang enthusiastically. It was almost like a funeral dirge in a way, but it was slightly haunting and beautiful. But again, just kudos to the crowd. You did affect the game. I think you did give Texas a home field advantage, and we're going to have to play some tough ones on the road this year. But let's make it, if this is our last year in the Big 12, let's make it that way for the Kansases and you know, the less than LSU, Notre Dame, Alabama names that we have gotten up for. And I'm sure we'll do in the SEC every week in and week out. But for every team that comes to play Texas, UTSA next week included, make it an absolute nightmare for them give that Texas home field advantage as the team battles injuries and all kinds of things. Give them that extra leg, in Hudson Card's case, literally, to stand on.
Early in the game, I was joking about Bama being shook, and then Bama really did look shook for a while. And I remember, I'll never forget how it felt when Texas came out of the locker room, and the crowd kind of felt flat early in the third quarter. It felt Texas was playing flat. The crowd was flat. And then there was a big third down play on defense, and that crowd blew up, and it wasn't quiet ever again. And part of the biggest win of the Chris Del Conte era is transforming what Texas game days are and have been. There's the fact that they do general admission instead of ticket pull now to force students to get there early and often is a big deal. The Bevo Boulevard and all of that, the walk-in, all of that is part of what has transformed the Texas game day experience and turned it into from a laughingstock into a legitimate strength. I mean, again, Will Anderson has literally played in every stadium that the SEC has to offer and said this was the loudest and best environment he's been in for the home team. So, like, I'm pretty okay with what happened from the fan standpoint. So all of y'all that were there, again, that's what we need to do. It's funny, Texas is apparently went from not SEC ready to SEC ready in 12 months. So I'm banging the drum this week on this conversation point of moral victories, right? And I don't believe in moral victories when it comes to sports. Like, obviously, I have a 5-year-old, so, like, we'll talk about, like, you tried hard. You worked really hard, buddy. But, like, when it comes to the Texas Longhorns, there is a level of expectation where moral victories don't exist. And I think the Longhorns are at that level of expectations. But I think there's a difference, and we have to, like, parse the conversation. There's nuance between saying this is something to build on and saying, well, we almost won, right? The Aggie victory is not a real thing in burnt orange, right? Well, we almost beat Alabama doesn't exist for the folks in Austin. But being able to say that Texas, after being called soft and after being called soft for a decade, was able to stand there and go toe-to-toe, punch for punch, haymaker for haymaker, make the Heisman winner drive not once but twice to win the game. That's something to build on. That's not a moral victory. That's saying, you can do this. Now go do it again 10 more times. There's a difference there, right? It's not saying, because after the game, and there was this dumb tweet from Danny Cannell, who's an absolute idiot, but Sark said, you know, Sark in the game was like, you know, that's one of the best teams in the country, and in a weird way, I feel good about where we are as a program, right? And so he responded, well, Sark, they shouldn't feel like they've arrived, blah, blah. And like in the literal same press conference, in the same statement, Sark said, our season will be defined by how we play throughout the entirety of the season. Somebody asked DeMarvian Overshown if that felt like a win. You know what he said? At the end of the day, it's an L on our side that we just got to come back and work tomorrow. Like, these players are not in the mindset of a moral victory. Those guys were pissed that they let Alabama walk out of there with a win. Those guys were upset because, you know what? After hearing an entire offseason about 5-7, losing to Kansas, 5-7, losing to Kansas, Texas is soft. Is Texas ever going to be back? Blah, 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 blah. Being able to come out and be within an inch of beating the big, bad Alabama Crimson Tide. There's no moral victories when you're the Texas Longhorns. But being able to say, nobody on my schedule is Alabama, is a thing you can say. Kelvin Banks looking at everybody across the line from him saying, you are not Will Anderson, and I made Will Anderson pay. Christian Jones saying, you are not Dallas Turner, and I kept Dallas Turner from getting to my quarterback. That, to me, is something you can build on. That's not a moral victory, but you sure put that feather in your cap, and you walk a little taller, and you have that Texas swagger, and you go out and say, you are not going to punch me as hard as Alabama, but I'm going to punch you as hard as I punched Alabama. And that's what you take away from this game. It's not a moral victory, but you're able to say and walk with confidence that you didn't have 7 days ago.
I love it. I heard one of the BON writers call it a Pyrrhic moral victory, which is just a hilarious term because we are the walking wounded. But I think though physically we may ail, mentally we are strong. And this proved that. They were the only 100, 20 people in the entire world who thought that Texas could win this game. They all shared a locker room. So good for them, right? The the idea of a moral victory, I think, is wrong. I've always disputed this, right? And victories, sometimes in war, I guess, are not necessarily moral or immoral. It should be a morale victory is how that term should be. I will fight that until the day I die. But, you know, again, screw it. It shouldn't be a morale victory either. It should have been a real victory. Tough breaks, tough refereeing, tough injuries, tough everything. Get them next year in Tuscaloosa and really prove it to them. Let Quinn Ewers go out and have something to say and play all four quarters about what keeping the Texas quarterback healthy looks like. But let that light a fire under your belly for the rest of the season. Let that belief that you had be true and carry on and lift the rest of the season up.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. You robbed me of my headline, Auburn.